Welcome to this podcast by the Research Institute of Industrial Economics in Stockholm, Sweden. My name is Elisabeth Precht, and with me here in the studio is Professor Sidney Winter, Deloitte & Touche Professor Emeritus of Management at Wharton School, University of Pennsylvania. Professor Winter, welcome to Stockholm and Sweden.
Thank you very much.
Late this afternoon, you will receive the Global Award for Entrepreneurship Research, the leading international award in entrepreneurship research, with a prize sum of 100,000 euros. What was your first thought when you got the message that you had been awarded this prize?
My first reaction was certainly one of surprise, rather extreme surprise.
And after you had been surprised, what did you think?
Well, the thing that passed through my mind is the great number of highly qualified entrepreneurship scholars that I know personally, and I was quite amazed that I had been selected for this prize.
We are happy that you are here. Your studies have broken grounds to new entrepreneurship research. Today, entrepreneurship is a buzzword. What does entrepreneurship mean to you, and has it changed over time because you've been in research for a long time?
Yes, it is quite true that it's a buzzword, and it is a buzzword that has used relatively flexibly or loosely, if you would. For me, it probably has continued to mean the same thing that it did in the start. My interest in entrepreneurship is in what I would call Schumpeterian entrepreneurship, following the tradition of the economist Joseph Schumpeter. And in that tradition, entrepreneurs are significant because they carry out innovations. They bring into being new products, new processes, new markets, new ways of organizing, and thus contribute to economic progress.
Mm-hmm. What was it that, at the beginning, triggered your interest in entrepreneurship?
I'm sure that my interest was triggered mainly by my encounter with Schumpeter's early book, The Theory of Economic Development, which was actually, his doctoral dissertation, published in German in 1911. And so the entrepreneur plays a central role in Schumpeter's theory, but probably it was more the theory as a whole that grabbed my attention rather than the particular important role that entrepreneurship plays in it.
Mm. Why would you argue is the entrepreneur important to all of us?
Entrepreneurship is important as one of the key mechanisms of change in the capitalist economy for the reason I just stated, that entrepreneurs have the characteristic role of bringing innovation into the economy. So although there are many other processes involved in creating economic progress, it's very clear that entrepreneurship is one of the key processes.
Mm-hmm. Do we appreciate entrepreneurs enough?
I think we probably appreciate them about enough. You know, some entrepreneurs obviously become very wealthy. Some become quite celebrated. But perhaps the larger mass of less prominent entrepreneurs are somewhat underappreciated because the amount of problem-solving work that has to be done to make the economy move forward is very large, and entrepreneurs do a great deal of that problem-solving work and probably collectively do not get all that much credit for it.
Mm. You've studied cooperation and startups during many decades. What economic policies can be used to stimulate entrepreneurship?
That's a very good and to some extent controversial question. It is well known that startups and entrepreneurial startups in particular have very dismal life prospects on the average at the start. The record is not a very good one. And in fact, Schumpeter suggested that perhaps the benefits or the returns to entrepreneurship were negative on the average, and it was only these occasional, particularly successful entrepreneurs who benefited a great deal. So So you might think in that context that policy should be oriented toward trying to have more success, less of this failure. But that's actually a very tricky question, because the whole point of entrepreneurship is experimentation in the interest of progress. And experimentation is necessarily dangerous to some extent to the health of the enterprise. So I think that relatively simple regulations affecting small firms, relatively forgiving bankruptcy laws, are probably some of the best general policies for making the environment of entrepreneurship more favorable.
Mm. So it's early money that the entrepreneurs need.
Well, that is true, there's an issue of financing, as you're probably referring to. A great many small enterprises, even ones that become very notable, actually draw on families and friends for early finance, and of course upon banks. So it is actually not so clear that addressing the financial problem in particular is a critical need.
Mm. Your studies on evolutionary economics have been influential. Could you please explain to us what is meant by evolutionary economics when it comes to entrepreneurship?
Ah, well, so evolutionary economics, more generally, emphasizes the fact that we discover what works in the economy to a large extent by actually trying it and seeing what happens. And so entrepreneurial enterprises are a leading example of that point. We need real results, real feedback to understand what will work and what makes a positive contribution. And that, as previously noted, can carry some risk of failure. So I like the slogan, feedback, not foresight, guides economic behavior, because the mainstream economic theory very much emphasizes the attempt at foresight, that rational decision makers try to look forward. Evolutionary economics emphasizes that things have to be tried in practice, and that it's the feedback that actually tells us whether it works or not.
Mm. Could you give us an example from your own research how this has worked?
I have done in recent years, and in collaboration with Gabriel Zelansky and other scholars, some work on what we call replicator organizations, which are these organizations which go around the world putting up individual establishments that are close copies of each other. The very, very common in the hotels, very common in fast food, many kinds of retailing are dominated by these replicator organizations. And so we've done a little inquiry into the histories of some of these organizations, and that is a situation where indeed, you know, you find things get tried and may ultimately prove successful, and may be transformed in the process. One example we like a lot is the example of the Starbucks coffee chain, which in its original example in Seattle, Washington, was very closely modeled on an Italian espresso shop with coffee in ceramic mugs and so forth, and Italian opera on the sound system, which is quite a bit different from Starbucks today. It was a trial and error and feedback that shaped the Starbucks that you find around the world today.
It's very interesting. You've taken a very active role in shaping the international scholarly community through journal editorship and PhD training. You've even been co-founder of an academic journal, right?
Correct.
Yes. Why has this been so important to you to kind of go outside the research box?
I don't think of it as being outside the research box, actually. It is a different way to influence the course of research. And if you would like to see more research on a particular topic, if you feel that you would be more comfortable with more company doing the kind of thing you're trying to do, then one way to do it is to write good articles that are examples of what you favor. And another way to do it, though, is to be involved, for example, in a journal and to try to help guide authors toward a higher standard and toward the kinds of topics that you favor. And still another way, of course, is training PhDs to do that kind of work. So I think of all of these as being actually a very, very link to the idea of to the research pursuits and the attempt to develop a better understanding of some particular topic.
Mm. Talking about academic journals, your studies have been quoted thousands and thousands of times. Somebody had counted 50,000 on Google Scholars, your citations. What do citations mean to research today? And do you believe that citations have a positive influence on research?
Citations have probably come to have too much significance in the research community. The best thing that you can say for citations is that we used to have the idea called publish or perish, which said that people, scholars would be advanced in their careers on the basis of their publication records. But that raises the question of how exactly do you assess a publication record. And counting citations to somebody's work is a highly imperfect way of assessing their actual influence in the system, but it beats counting publications. So it beats publish or perish as a system for research assessment at the individual level. That said, however, citation counts are too much used by administrators who are not actually engaging in the content of the research itself, and to have careers shaped by this rather casual measure for reasons of administrative convenience is really unfortunate, and we have gone much too far in that direction.
What do you teach your PhD students about this? What do you tell them?
Well, in terms of the level of interaction with a PhD student, the question of citations is really pretty far down the road, because it takes, first we have to get an article out. That is the first step that has to be taken in order to get any citations, and that is often a very difficult first step for younger scholars. So it often takes some time before citation counts actually become highly relevant. The only sense in which they sort of become relevant earlier is that obviously in picking topics, one likes to pick topics that will generate some interest. Mm-hmm. And also in going around and trying to give seminars or promote attention to your work. Having a good doing that and having a good topic is a step toward citations in the future. So in that sense, they do matter early on, but the real results take quite a while to come in. Mm-hmm.
The research influence on public policy is also much talked about. In your opinion, what is the most influential aspect of your research influence in terms of public policy?
And that's not at all an easy question, especially if we think about public policy in the United States, which is a very large, complex, contentious sort of system, and the influences that are actually involved in any particular policy change typically come from many different directions, and rarely do you see, I think, a particular line of scholarship shaping policy very directly, sometimes indirectly or after a period of time. But subject to that, I think probably contributions in the area of intellectual property and patent policy, and to some extent related issues in antitrust economics, are probably ones where quite a few relevant participants have actually been exposed to some of my work, and maybe they think about it a little differently because of that exposure. I'd like to hope it is true.
Yes. Thank you, Professor Sidney Winter, for answering questions about your research. I hope you will enjoy the prize ceremony later this afternoon. And thank you who has been listening to this podcast by the Research Institute of Industrial Economics in Stockholm, Sweden. Thank you.